with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. The Senate gave final congressional approval Tuesday to the most sweeping changes to Medicare since its creation in 1965, including a new prescription drug benefit for 40 million older and disabled Americans. The 54-44 vote sends the bill to George W. Bush, who will sign it into law. Supporters said the $395 billion measure, which gives private insurers a large new role in health care for seniors, was a long overdue change for the 38-year-old Medicare program. Opponents on both sides of the aisle complained that the bill was a giveaway to insurers and drug companies. Senator Edward Kennedy said it will dump seniors in the cold arms of the HMOs. Drug coverage would not begin until 2006, although seniors next year will be able to purchase a drug discount card that officials said could reduce their pharmacy bills by 15 to 25%. The government has freed 20 prisoners from its high-security prison for foreign terror suspects in Cuba, bringing the total release to more than 80, and plans to send dozens more home soon. The next batch, however, will probably get out of the Guantanamo Bay prison only if their governments promise to continue to imprison and investigate them. The latest releases stem from negotiations that were sped up after American allies complained the Bush administration was taking too long to resolve the cases of hundreds of foreigners captured in the global war on terrorism. The Pentagon said Monday it had transferred 20 prisoners on Friday, bringing to 88 the number who have left the facility since it opened in January 2002. The U.S.-appointed government in Iraq raided the offices of Al Arabiya Television on Monday, banned its broadcast from Iraq, and threatened to imprison its journalist. Media groups said the action called into question the future of a free press in the country. Al Arabiya said it would not fight the ban and would report on Iraq from its headquarters in Dubai. The Iraqi Governing Council banned the station, one of the Arab world's largest, from working in Iraq for broadcasting an audio tape a week ago of a voice it said belonged to Saddam Hussein. The U.S.-appointed council did not say how long the ban would be in effect.
Like most people, you've probably got a calendar or a day planner to help you keep track of important dates. But there are some things in life that we can't put on our calendars because we don't know when or if they'll happen. Things like emergencies, disasters, or even a fire. So prepare for the unexpected today by establishing a family disaster plan with help from your local Red Cross. When we come together, we become part of something bigger than us all. Help prepare your community by visiting redcross.org. The American Red Cross. Together, we can save a life.
A wild melee in Golden Gate Park left two people injured, a dog with a bullet wound, and a horse badly mauled. It happened Sunday when a woman illegally let her pit bull dog off its leash and the dog attacked a mounted policeman's horse. The cop was tossed to the ground, the dog owner was kicked in the face by the horse took off with the dog in pursuit. The cop was treated for injuries, the woman suffered head injuries, the horse was recovering, and the dog was picked up by animal control. This is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
If you've got a clogged up nose, Simply Stuffy. If you've got a snuffly nose, Simply Stuffy. If the rest of you feels fine, but your nose is out of line, give your schnozzle what it needs, Simply Stuffy.
Simply Stuffy, from the makers of Children's Tylenol. It has only the medicine your child needs to make a stuffy nose simply disappear.
If you want to smell a rose, get the stuff out of your nose. If you're sick of feeling snotty, Simply Stuffy.
Simply Stuffy. Use as directed.
Corporate greed is not some amorphous concept, but a human characteristic that comes with faces and names, such as Stephen Bird. He's CEO of Safeway, the sprawling supermarket giant. Bird is leading the charge in California to bust the wage scale and the union of his industry's employees. Supermarket work won't make you a millionaire, but thanks to the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, employees who are unionized can earn a slice of America's middle-class life. In California, baggers and clerks make from about $7.50 an hour to $18, depending on the job and length of service. It's this middle-class possibility that Bird and his cohorts are out to kill. Industry executives have been whacking at workers' earnings for some time. For example, $18 an hour produces an income of about $36,000 a year for full-time work. But grocery executives hold workers to between 24 and 32 hours a week, whacking their annual earnings to around $25,000 or less. Even that's too much for Bird, who's now demanding that workers' pay be frozen for 2 years, that their health care benefits be slashed, and that new employees be hired at a drastically lowered pay scale. Not only will the new workers be Walmartized into the category of working poor, but the change would then have a huge incentive to simply off the experienced employees who are better paid, replacing them with this new tier of low-wage people. As one of the striking workers put it, "If we lose this fight, there go 70,000 jobs that no longer will be middle-class jobs." Especially infuriating is Bird's efforts to cut workers' health care, whining that they're getting Cadillac benefits. Yet Bird, who collected about $7 million in personal pay from Safeway last year, gets Rolls-Royce health care benefits for himself. This is Jim Hightower saying, "I wonder if he'll be cutting his own pay in health care."
Hear that? Doug made his confession that he used hair color.
Yeah, I was expecting to make it the treatise of the last month. Aren't you guys sweet?
I would recommend sticking with one color, however. Each month you'd have
I
want to
see you try the afro stuff.
Yeah, right. I'm going to do that.
I decided that it is not the color of the hair, but the head that it stuck to that's important.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in the American way from coast to coast, welcome. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America radio program. The drug HMO industry, well, the photo on the front of the New York Times today, the New York Times online edition anyway, is a smiling Bill Frist, a multimillionaire about to become even richer. Bill Frist, of course, his family owns the nation's largest privately owned chain of private hospitals. And they are going to make out like bandits with this bill that just passed this morning through the Senate on a 54-44 vote. After the Senate killed, Ted Kennedy actually tried to filibuster the thing. He actually tried to stop it. But he didn't have the votes. They killed the filibuster thing effort. And as the San Francisco Chronicle reported, quote, nearly two dozen Democrats broke party ranks Monday to force a vote on a contentious $400 billion Medicare prescription drug benefit. I'm really curious how much of the pressure that the AARP brought to bear on this was responsible for this, because they weren't able to get the energy bill through, and these are both just right in line with the con agenda of turning America over to corporations, of turning government functions over to corporations, of putting our lives in the hands of corporations, who are not answerable to we, the people. And, of course, the AARP pushing this, its president, William Dinelli, the former head of the ad agency that launched the Harry and Louise ads when Bill and Hillary Clinton were proposing changes to our health care system to move us towards universal health coverage. A former Nixon administration official, now the president of the AARP. The AARP now making over $100 million a year selling insurance to its members to fill in the holes in Medicare. So now here comes this bill that says, okay, we're going to give you a little bit of prescription drug coverage, but there's a whole bunch of holes in it. And the AARP is now set to probably double or triple its annual revenues. Instead of making $100 million, they'll probably be making $300, $400, $500 million 5 years from now. So it was worth the $7 million investment. And, I mean, you know, looking at it from a business point of view, I suppose it makes perfect sense. But that's the problem. Should businesses be deciding the governance of the United States of America? This was the case that came before the Supreme Court back in 1978, Boston versus Bilotti. First National Bank of Boston versus, I think his name was Frank Bilotti. He was the Attorney General of the state of Massachusetts. And Massachusetts had a law in the books that said corporations can't spend money to lobby. Now, I believe there was an exception that they could spend money. It didn't say that they couldn't spend money to lobby. They couldn't spend money to advertise, to advocate issues in political campaigns. And I think there was an exception that said that unless it had to do directly with their business, although I'd have to go back and read the decision. But in any case, it was a 5-4 decision by the court. It just one of those hairbreadth. This is why it is so important that we be very careful about who gets on the Supreme Court. In this 5-4 decision, Boston versus Bilotti, 1978, the Supreme Court ruled that corporations could advertise that money was speech, that corporations were persons, that they had free speech rights, and that money was speech, and therefore they could spend money to speak about political issues. And it rolled back 200 years of American law that had historically said, I'm sorry, corporations can't do that. Politicians can speak all they want. And if a politician happens to be, you know, in the pocket of a corporation, that certainly has happened. I mean, go all the way back to Alexander Hamilton of the First Bank of the United States. And that politician can speak out. But for a corporation to use its enormous wealth and power, $7 million. I mean, it's not a small ad campaign. I'm sure you've seen the ads that AARP ran. And it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what kind of corporate sponsorship the Bush campaign is going to be getting in 2004. It's just... This is an administration that just has completely sold out to corporations. And here now, Congress as well. And, you know, almost two dozen Democrats, along with all the Republicans. Actually, there were three Republicans who said no. Chuck Hagel, who wants to run for president. The guy who I'm still curious about the deal with his voting machines in his own state of Nebraska back 8 years ago. Chuck Hagel, who sees himself as the next best hope for a Republican presidency, so he's trying to establish his credentials as a moderate. Lincoln Chafee, who is actually a kind of a Rockefeller Republican, I suppose you could say, and John McCain, who I think is one of the few idealists left in the Republican Party, for better or worse. I mean, some of his ideals give me chills, but, you know, on some things he's a pretty stand-up guy. In any case... It's amazing he's still around, given the extent to which he hasn't sold out, although there are certainly areas, huge areas, where he has. But the bill has passed. The question I wanted to ask this hour is, what is the future of Jefferson's ideal of democracy in the United States and around the world? But the news kind of preempts that. To start our program, by the way, today is day 134. Day 134 in the search for the senior administration official who committed treason.
And I don't know if we're going to find out the senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
Yeah. And it's day 288 in the search for weapons of mass destruction. Day 774 in the search for the anthrax killer who sent anthrax to Tom DeLay and Judiciary Committee Chairman Patrick Leahy just as they were considering the Patriot Act. And day 797 in the search for that man whose name will not pass the lips of George W. Bush. Notice.
For both presidents, the war on terror that you're both engaged in, there are two principals that are still at large. Could you tell us anything about the whereabouts of Osama bin Laden? Is he back in business in Pakistan? And what about Saddam Hussein? Is he back in Iraq?
Well, let me start off. There's more than two principals at large. There are terrorists who still have designs on destabilizing Pakistan government and or destroying innocent life. You've named two. There are others. We'll find them. It's a matter of time.
We're on the hunt, yeah. We'll find them. If we're going to find them, we will find them within 3 months of November 2004. I'd be willing to put money on it. Day 797 in the search for Osama bin Laden. Hiding out, waiting, will he be the October surprise for this administration? 16 minutes after the hour, our phone number, 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937, just so you know. According to Newsday, one thing is certain, this Medicare drug benefit bill, people are really, I think, really caught on this thing, because there are people of good conscience who acknowledge, hey, you know, back when Medicare was passed in the 60s, when it was created, drugs were like, you know, 5% of the average, you know, most drugs were more or less generic, drugs were cheap, the drug companies hadn't risen up to become these empires, and now drugs can represent, you know, not uncommon, the drugs are half the cost of treatment, or close to it. And so, you know, there's a lot of people, a lot of reasonable people who say, you know, well, okay, this is the camel's nose under the tent to get drugs in. But along with it is the camel's nose under the edge of the tent to bring corporations in. And it's just outrageous. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number. Jim in Ohio's on the line. Hey, Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hello, Tom. How are you today?
I am great. You guys get hit with a snowstorm?
I'm pretty cool up here. It's about 35, I think.
Oh, okay, I thought I'd heard that there was snow going through there. It's heading its way here toward Vermont. Anyway,
well,
what's on your mind, Jim?
Very well, maybe later.
Yeah.
I've been trying to keep up with a lot of this, and my mom and my mother-in-law, along with my wife and I, we have told AARP not to bill us again for membership. And we've also called about 20 or more senators and congressmen since this little fiasco has been going on.
Yeah.
And I kind of think this might be the best thing that could have happened to us in a way. I believe.
Well, just if I may interrupt you, Jim, you mean just like George Bush being elected was the best thing that could happen to us because it ripped the mask off the face of phony conservatism and let us see the naked power grab of corporations over democracy?
Well, you're right. And I think what this has really done, you see, my mother and my mother-in-law, you know, they're not wealthy people, but they've worked and they've got an income from Social Security and, you know, they're both covered from Medicare. And they are scared to death of what they're doing to their Medicare. Now, these seniors, they are very beholden to their Medicare. And you screw with their Medicare, and there's hell to pay. Yeah. And I believe this is going to blow up on old George. And I just urge your listeners, and I'm going to continue on, I'm going to call everybody that I can call and think of. Now, I've probably spent $300 in the last 3 or 4 days calling these jokers, but that's okay.
Yeah, well, keep it up, Jim. I'm sorry the music means we're at the end here, but you need to get a cheaper long-distance company, too.
No, I'm just talking.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Keep it up, though. Good work. Thanks for the call, Jim. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more about this incredible bill. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more music, but first a look at weather. Here's meteorologist Tom Sparks.
Thanks, Chad. There's a front moving in from the south, which is going to mix with warm air, giving us the distinct possibility for showers over the next few days. In fact, some of them are going to be big soakers, let me tell you. However, if you're planning any outdoor activities for the weekend, I have good news.
So it's going to be clear?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See how much you could save. Visit Geico.com. Geico, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. But don't take my word for it. Call us to get a free sampler. Yes, you heard me right, a free sampler. Two full-size bottles delivered to your doorstep for a $10 shipping cost only. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I'm Michael.
I'm Ellen.
And we're the Cooking Couple. Join us every Sunday from noon to 2 Eastern Time right here for the Cooking Couple Show, where we serve you food with attitude, plus a heaping helping of humor.
And a playful pinch of romance.
It's all about food, family, and fun.
We'll help you juggle kids, kitchen, career, health, and relationships with passion and commitment.
We cover everything from new product reviews and consumer information to quick, simple, and easy recipes just for the two of you.
Plus parenting tips and tricks.
Cooking advice to save time and money.
Nutrition news and healthier living.
Entertainment options for the whole family.
And how to tag team manage kids, career, life, and relationships.
Plus, I'll tell you how to train your in-laws so they don't become outlaws.
So tune in every Sunday from 12 noon to 2 right here for the Cooking Couple Show.
And when the Cooking Couple cook, we do it on all four burners.
It's food with attitude.
Chop suey, chow mein, yum, one, two, four, and you.
The following program is recommended for mature individuals and may contain material unsuitable for morons, cretins, and dishwipes.
Hey, I wanted to say dick dick.
Okay, give me your anaconda. I'll give you my dick dick.
Deal!
Anaconda! Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
I saw her today at the reception. A glass of wine in her hand. I knew she was gonna meet her connection. At her feet was a fortune's man. You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want.
But if you try sometimes.
But if you try sometimes, well, you might find.
Yeah, you can still get what you need. We need to be getting a change in the administration of the United States of America, and in so many of our state governments and our Congress. We get, throw these bums out who are just owned, bought, and sold by corporate interests, Democrats and Republicans alike. And let's get some decent statesmen and stateswomen and politicians in who, well, you know that rant. Newsday. Share some interesting statistics. The seven lawmakers who wrote this bill, this HMO bill, this HMO-sponsored, drug industry-sponsored, make Bill Fritz a multimillionaire bill, the seven lawmakers who wrote the bill received $11 million in donations just from the drug companies. The pharmaceutical industry employs 675 lobbyists on Capitol Hill. Over the past 3 years, campaign contributions from the pharmaceutical industry have exceeded $60 million, according to the Center for Responsive Politics. You think that they're given that money because they're charitable? The result is a bill which, as Newsday says, the pharmaceutical industry is poised to reap a multi-billion dollar bonanza. See, they spend $60 million, they make back multiple billions. This is called investment. ROI, return on investment. Pharmaceutical industry is poised to reap a multi-billion dollar bonanza in the form of millions of new customers and limits on foreign competition. Which raises the question, where are all the dead Canadians? Say, you shouldn't import drugs from Canada because they're not safe. Where are the dead Canadians? Point me to one, please. Armin in Florida. Thanks for calling 1-800-TALK. Yes, hey, Armin, how are you today?
Yeah, I'm fine. I have one question, and then I have a comment, if I may, please.
Sure.
First, I'd like to know, where is Ross Perot when you really need him?
Yeah. The guy actually spoke some truth about NAFTA and GATT. He was actually rather eloquent about it.
Well, remember when he was also criticizing lobbyists with their Italian shoes and all this stuff up there?
Yep. Yeah,
well,
the media portrayed him as a cranky, cranky nutty billionaire, which he may well be. I liked Ken Follett's book about him. I thought that was fascinating. What was it, Lie Down with Lions or On the Wings of Eagles? It was one or the other. But in any case, yeah, where is he when you need him? I think he's just, kind of getting old and tired. But anyhow, what was your comment there, Armin? We got about a minute left.
Okay, I think this Medicare bill is, in reality, protectionism for the fascist racketeers.
Yep.
And government subsidies for their feudal lords.
Yep, I agree. I mean,
enough said?
Yeah, enough said. Thank you, Armin. It's elegantly put. We have, Armin is using the word fascism in the most correct sense. The American Heritage Dictionary, 1987, said fascism is the merging of business and state interests. As Mussolini said, fascism should more correctly be called corporatism, because it's the merging of business and state interests. And you want to see the merging of business and state interests, just take a look at what just passed the Senate this morning. It's just outrageous. This is absolutely outrageous. This is Tom Harbin on the IE America Radio Network, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Vin in Santa Fe, Paul in Detroit, Doug in Santa Fe also. Hang on the line. We'll pick up your calls right on the other side of this break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
One of the world's most feared diseases seems to get its start in an unlikely place. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Muddy farms in southern China might not look like genetic engineering laboratories, but Mark Jerome Walters argues that's essentially what they are. Walters is a veterinarian and author of a new book called Six Modern Plagues. He says Chinese pig and duck farms are the breeding grounds for new strains of influenza. Walters says ducks and other water birds carry influenza viruses.
They contribute the genes to influenza. Even when humans come down with influenza, those genes, a big part of that bug, was borrowed from birds, aquatic birds, and also gulls.
Walter says southern China has thousands of family farms that raise ducks, pigs, and chickens in close, dirty quarters, with people living in the midst of these operations. He says that gives influenza viruses opportunities to mutate, sometimes into highly infectious forms.
You have a genetic engineering laboratory here in which the wild viruses mix with pig viruses. They go to humans. They can go back to pigs. We worry about deliberate genetic engineering, and I'm always a little bit stupefied to think that we are condoning massive genetic engineering laboratories and experiments right now, and we all condone it through the choices we make and the foods that we eat.
Influenza kills about 30,000 people each year in the United States, but experts worry about the potential for deadly new strains to emerge. The worst flu pandemic struck in 1918 and killed as many as 40 million people worldwide. Walters notes that the world now has six times more people. He says a similar event today could kill hundreds of millions, and it's likely to emerge from those Chinese duck farms. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
I'm Michael.
I'm Ellen.
And we're the Cooking Couple.
Join us every Sunday from noon to 2 Eastern Time right here for the Cooking Couple Show.
Where we serve you food with attitude plus a heaping helping of humor. It's all about food, family, and fun.
So tune in every Sunday from noon to 2 for nutrition, fitness, innovative products, consumer tips, and entertainment options for the whole family.
It's the Cooking Couple Show. And when the Cooking Couple cook, we do it on all four burners.
It's food with attitude.
Chop suey, chow mein, yum, one, two, four, and you.
Best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting when the evening comes, watching the ships roll in, then I'll watch them roll away again, yeah. I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, I'm just sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time.
And welcome back to Talk Radio for the rest of us. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, stream 145 on the Sirius satellite radio system. Beaming live on the radiopower.org website, ieamericaradio.com website, live365.com, archives at whiterosesociety.com. You can find it all at www.tomhartman.com, where you'll also find links to our chat room, which is live and active right at this moment. I'm reading it as we're on the air. If you want to say something to me and you don't want to call in, you can just go into the chat room and type it in, as well as engage in an interesting conversation with a fine bunch of folks. So speaking of interesting conversation and fine bunch of folks, we got Doug in Santa Fe on the line. Doug, thanks for calling 1-800-TALK. Yes, what's on your mind here?
How's it going, Tom?
I am great.
I'm glad to hear it. I've got a very interesting question. Maybe somebody in the chat room or in the audience might be able to answer it. But the things that are going on in the United States right now and in other countries seem to fall somewhat on a bit of a cycle.
Yeah.
I was wondering if anybody has done any research as to how long these cycles last. What are their duration? We've been going through politically, kind of a commandeering of the people's commons, as you so often put it, for about 30 years. And I'm wondering if there might be a mathematical equation that could, to kind of put it in better perspective.
That's a great question.
How long it's going to last, when the next one might be, because they do it for everything else. I watched Nova the other night about the flipping of the magnetic field.
Yeah.
They've got that down to a science, so there's got to be some kind of science that would let us know how long we have to go before the rest of the United States wakes up and we overturn what's happening.
Well, Thomas Jefferson actually wrote about that, and it's interesting. I thought I had his letter here because I have a whole bunch of Jefferson stuff here that I was going to share with you today, but this Medicare thing just has kind of, you know, blown it out of the water. But he suggested basically that every 20 years the government should reinvent itself. If you look at cycles, though, in direct answer to your question, first of all, Strauss and Howe wrote an incredible book called The Fourth Turning about the cycles that include the political cycles that you see. And they pointed out that there's a 75 to 80 year, basically a four-generation cycle of depressions and wars. And that within that cycle, there are four pieces. So there's basically these 20-year cycles that they identified, that Jefferson had also identified. And so you had 75 years ago, you had the Great Depression of the 20s and 30s. Late 20s, 75 years before that, more or less, or 80 years before that, more or less, you had the Great Panic of the 1850s, which led to the Civil War. 80 years before that, you had the Great Depression of the 1770s, and the late 1760s and the early 1770s, which led the East India Company to lobby the British government to give them a tax deduction, a tax reduction, and a tax rebate on their tea, which led to the Boston Tea Party, the colonists saying, no, we don't want them to do this Walmart thing. And if you go in their book, they go all the way back into the 1400s of these 75 to 80 year cycles of economic cycles. In the United States, in terms of the people saying, hey, enough is enough, it's really interesting. You see that in the 1770s, you had a generation that rose up against King George III and said, enough is enough. We don't want a government that's controlled by a corporation. And that really was one of the major objections. In my book on equal protection, there's several chapters about this. And there's, in fact, the chapters are live. You can read them for free on the Internet. Go to TomHartmann.com and go to Unequal Protection and just read the chapter on the Boston Tea Party. It's right there on the Internet. So that started in the 1770s. By the 1820s or 1830, well, by the 1830s, let's say, Andrew Jackson, toward the end of his administration, and the Democratic Party, which Jefferson had started, it was originally called the Democratic Republicans, had become so corrupt that in 1859, on Jefferson's birthday, Lincoln. Well, I talked about this yesterday on the air, didn't I? Lincoln, you know, talked about how the Republicans and Democrats had switched places, and the Republicans became the party of reform. And this whole idea of reform, in some would argue, led to the Civil War. Then after the Civil War, we got corrupt again. Both the Democrats and the Republicans got corrupted by corporations through the Gilded Age, and that led to in 1872, the Progressive Party splitting off from the Republican Party. And going their own way, and the Progressive Party, of course, and the populists were very effective in producing change. They brought about the amendment to the Constitution that the Senate should actually be elected by you and me. Up until 1917, the United States senators were appointed by professional politicians in the states, and the people had nothing to say about it. And so the populist movement led to that. It led to a lot of the laws, like you see in California and many other states, to impeach or recall elected officials, you know, for better or for worse. I don't think they foresaw, you know, rich guys like Daryl Issa getting in and gaming the system. And ultimately led to, in 1920, the election, the passage of the 19th or 20th Amendment that gave women the right to vote. So then you know, but during the 20s, and powers swang back to the corporations. In the early 19-teens, you had a Supreme Court decision saying that it was unconstitutional to have minimum wage laws, it was unconstitutional to have child labor laws, and, you know, there was a full-bore attack against organized labor. And then, of course, in the 1930s, we woke up and said, hey, enough is enough. So, you know, with FDR, and he came in, and said, now we're back where we were with the Gilded Age, and we're back where we were with King George. So it looks to me like we've gone through basically three cycles, and we're fixing to go through another one. And I'm frankly very optimistic about this, because I really do believe that we will go through this cycle. It's just, you know, it's like childbirth. You know, there's this painful period before the baby comes out. Yeah, but as far as I can tell, Doug, in answer to your question, that's how the cycles work. And in fact, I'm working on a book that will be out from Random House in July of next year called Return to Democracy, about these topics. And that's why all this stuff is right at the top of my head, because I've been doing the research on it recently. And
look forward to reading it.
That's what I'm seeing. That's what I'm seeing. And that's why I have a lot of hope, frankly, because, you know, it's as democracy is the natural order of human beings. I'm absolutely convinced of that, because it's what you see across the animal kingdom. And this is the new research. We talked about this last week or the week before on the air. So I'm not real worried. I just, you know, it's just a real difficult time right now. Thanks for the call, Doug. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Paul in Detroit is on the line. Hey, Paul, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hello, Tom. Just wanted to mention that it was really great calling the AARP this morning on their 800 number, requesting that they remove my name from their mailing list.
Uh-huh.
And
what
happened? I felt good after I completed that call. I've got one suggestion, if anybody wants to do that. When the automated voice asks, do you want to join the AARP, say yes, because that way you'll get immediate service.
Oh, then you get a human being.
Pardon?
Then you get a human being.
Oh, yeah, and you'll get one immediately, because the automated voice says, oh, that's great, you want to join the AARP, and then it isn't very long after that that somebody will answer the phone. Otherwise, if you said no, you'll be put on hold and forgotten.
Right, it's just like the phone company. If you call, you know, they say, press 1 if you're calling, if you're one of a new subscriber, press 2 if you're calling for service. You press 2, you're on hold for a half hour. You press 1, you get a human being right away.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, good tip, Paul. You wouldn't happen to have the AARP's 800 number handy, would you?
Absolutely do. The 800 number is 424-3410, and that number is also available on their website, website.
AARP.org is their website.
Think so, yes. 424-3410. Now, I was real nice to the lady, and she was very efficient and took my name off the mailing list.
Yeah, well, I mean, she's just doing her job. A person who's trying to make a living. The bottom line. When you got to keep in mind, when you call these folks at the AARP, you are not talking to this slimy guy, Donnelly, who's the CEO. You're not talking to the board of directors. You're not talking to the guys who are making multi-million-dollar salaries huge salaries at AARP. You're talking to somebody who's probably making something close to minimum wage to answer the phone. So please be decent to them.
I was, and it felt good.
Yeah, okay, good on you,
Paul. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for calling. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number, 1-800-825-5937. Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma is on the line. Hey, Glenn, how are you today?
You know, as I'm watching this battle between corporate interests and masquerading as protectors of individual rights, like, oh, we're going to give you prescription coverage, but hidden in there is, you know, this dismantling of Medicare, or switching all the sick people over to Medicare and killing it that way, and, you know, all this discussion. And it goes on to all the topics that have been going on with this administration now that they have control of both houses and that sort of thing. How, you know, my fear is, let's say somehow we survive all this manipulation and manage to elect a Democratic president. How can we put it back? I mean, how can we wrest the power away from these huge corporate interests and back into the hands of people that are concerned about the common person so that we have a middle class and not just Serbs and rulers.
Well, you're asking the same question that was asked in 1860 and the same question that was asked in 1929, 1930, rather. 1932, I think, was the... Wasn't 32 the election that FDR came to power in? I don't frankly recall. I don't have the list in front of me. But basically, I mean, Lincoln wasn't elected to fight the Civil War. Lincoln was elected in a national statement of disgust against the, at that time, it was the banking powers that everybody was afraid of. And the banks having, you know, there was a panic on the banks and there was all this corruption and the bankers were making off with all this money and there was this big debate about whether we should have a gold-denominated currency or not, or whether the United States should have a bank, you know, of the United States, which was Alexander Hamilton's dream. And of course, he failed in getting that written into the Constitution. So now we've got this hybrid with the Fed, but they didn't have that back then. I mean, the Fed came along in either 1913 or 1918, I forget which year. But you're asking the same question that people were asking in 1860 when they said enough is enough and they voted for Abraham Lincoln, and the same question that people were asking in either 1930 or 32 when they said enough is enough and they voted for FDR. And I am certain that if not in 2004, then in 2008. And the answer to your question is, you know, how do you put it back together? You put it back together step by step, the same way they took it apart. And you do it the same way that FDR did, and the same way that Lincoln started out trying to do. And hopefully, you know, I really don't think that we have to worry about a civil war here like Lincoln did. The issues are not as terrible, frankly, as they were in 1860. So that's the good news. But you put it back together step by step. You get decent legislators. You get good people appointed to the Supreme Court. I mean, FDR, one of the first things he did after he was elected was he announced his intention to pack the Supreme Court. He came right out and said it. And he said, we're going to get people on there who are going to roll back that Supreme Court ruling that minimum wage laws are illegal, that unions acting together were a violation of the Sherman Antitrust Act and all these other things, and said, you know, we're going to take this country back. And he did. I mean, it took him 3.5 terms to do it. But, you know, it's lasted, what, 60, 80 years? Something like it lasted 70 years so far. I mean, it's been unraveling the last 20. So these cycles come around. Glenn, thanks for the call. A good point. AARP faces grassroots outrage. The Palm Beach Post reports area seniors are protesting AARP's support of the Medicare bill. 80 people gathered Monday in front of the Century Village Clubhouse, this in Palm Beach, to say that they're angry and frustrated and cut up their AARP cards. The Alameda Star-Times reports a poll last week by Heart Research that showed that 65% of AARP members want Congress to go back to the drawing board on the bill, while only 18% say Congress should pass the bill as is. Well, sorry, folks, it's done. Mike in Florida's on the line. Hey, Mike, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Yeah, good morning, Tom. Listen, I'm another member who gave up my membership to the AARP, and I did that last week. And the point I would like to ask you, can you or some of the other talk show hosts recommend an organization for our seniors to become a part of that will represent just our needs? I don't even want them to be part of the Sierra Club or to represent, you know, have the Sierra Club contacted with or connected with them. I just want them to work for seniors. Can you recommend an organization for us?
Yeah, we had a guy on last week who is with an organization, a national organization that represents seniors, that has 3 million members and has a website and the whole thing. And I am at this moment not pulling it out of the top of my brain. So during the next break, I'm going to go upstairs and find Louise and get that information for you.
I mean, I don't mind paying the same membership and doing whatever, but I want somebody that's going to speak for me, or at least speak on the issues that are of interest to us in ways that we want to be represented.
Yeah, I agree. This is the activist organization that is the alternative to the AARP, and they're not in the business of hustling insurance,
they're not quite as visible. They're not a broker for the insurance companies.
Right, and then therefore they don't have quite as much money to lobby and advertise and things, so you probably don't know about them, but they do have 3 million members, and I'll get their name and give it to you right after the break.
I'll be listening.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Joe from New Jersey's on the line, 1-800-TALK-YES, our number. Hey, Joe, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, Tom. I listen to your show all the time, every chance I get, and I think it's great.
Thank you.
Coming up on the Christmas season, I'm sorry if this is a bit of a non sequitur, but coming up on the Christmas season, you know, everybody has seen the movie It's a Wonderful Life. But sure. I wonder how many people are going to watch it this year and not make any connection between the allegory in that movie and what's happening to our country today.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, how can, you know, people
I wonder
help
how
people
many
see
people, you know, Joe, I wonder how many people are going to watch the movie and get the sudden click.
It'd be great if that would happen.
Yeah, I think it will. It'll be interesting to see if they even play it, though. I mean, you know, it's a lot of the old movies, they're just not playing them anymore. They're trying to go for their gee whiz productions. But a good point. I mean, thanks, Joe. It's a wonderful life, great movie. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a minute.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
Dermarest, the psoriasis solution, asks,
what's complete freedom? For me, it's an open road with the top down. It's my bare arms getting warmed by the sun. It's my bare arms without a trace of psoriasis.
Complete freedom, brought to you by the complete relief of Dermarest psoriasis. Unlike brands which only relieve itching and inflammation, Dermarest psoriasis also removes the embarrassing scales, allowing healthy skin to grow.
Healthy skin? That's complete freedom.
Dermarest, the psoriasis solution.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Andy Dave Rush here, inviting you to listen to Home Improvement USA. Ken Walchek from Chicago's number one hardware store, Clark Devon Hardware, John Seip from United Marketing Force, Jay Brentlinger from Orban, and, of course, Danny Lickford from today's Homeowner Television Show, take your home improvement questions. Our guests include industry experts from across the country. We've been America's most useful talk show for 10 years, so join us for Home Improvement USA every Saturday, 2 to 4 Eastern, and rebroadcast 8 to 10 Eastern right here on IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, helping you with your pets and talking to celebrities, like from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies, Raven Simone. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have 2 chinchillas and I have a big Briard.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out, so he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Charisse Dolittle, who talks to the animals, and you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All they need is love.
Animal Talk, Saturdays and Sundays on the IE America Radio Network.
Tom Hartman Show.
The computerized voting machines in the last election, our question is the theft of your vote. On our chat room here, Brainshrub points out that H is the eighth letter of the alphabet. A is the first letter of the alphabet. So if you take that 18181, the exact number of votes that three different candidates in one county in Texas got on these computerized voting machines, and you simply convert it to letters, it becomes... Is it a conspiracy or a coincidence?
Okay, first of all, I wanted to say congratulations. We were elected to the White House by one of the narrowest margins in history. 63% of registered voters...
Wait a second. You wanted me to poll registered voters?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Welcome back. The bad news, the drug HMO industry-backed Medicare bill passed the Senate this morning, 54-44. The group we were talking about that I was mentioning, I believe it was Mike in Florida, asked about an alternative to the AARP, and it's the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. It was an organization started back in the 80s. And they have several million members, I believe 3 million members. Barbara Cannelli was the woman that we had on who was the president and CEO of that organization. And their website is www.ncpssm.org, as in National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. ncpssm.org. Now, I don't know if they're the best alternative to the AARP, but they certainly are a good, solid advocacy group that has been in this business for 20-some-odd years. Barbara Cannelli, who was on our program as a former congresswoman, served 8 terms in the United States House of Representatives from Connecticut, including Hartford and other towns. My sense of it is, I'm not a member, but my sense of it is that it's a good organization. And you check out their website. And give them a call. And if you find out anything about them, you know, pro or con, call me up and let me know. Let the rest of our listeners know, because I think a lot of people are looking at this thing with Cannelli and the sellout of the AARP. The AARP basically turning itself into a for-profit insurance sales institution that's exploiting its members for the sake of the insurance buck. And the insurance industry, of course, being one of the two industries that are making out like bandits, or one of the three industries, hospitals, pharma, and insurance, in this HMO bill, in this drug bill. Anyhow, that's the alternative. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy.
Yeah, from those gnats in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the fields that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Animal
Animal Talk, your animalogical super information highway about pets. Every Saturday and Sunday, we take your calls, help you with your pets, give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like, from Eight Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel.
Animal Talk, Saturday noon to 2, Sunday, 7 to 9 p.m. on the IE America Radio Network.
Yes, I'm calling about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off.
Why?
Is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. The Senate gave final congressional approval Tuesday to the most sweeping changes to Medicare since its creation in 1965, including a new prescription drug benefit for 40 million older and disabled Americans. The 54-44 vote sends the bill to George W. Bush, who will sign it into law. Supporters said the $395 billion measure, which gives private insurers a large new role in health care for seniors, was a long overdue change for the 38-year-old Medicare program. Opponents on both sides of the aisle complained that the bill was a giveaway to insurers and drug companies. Senator Edward Kennedy said it will dump seniors in the cold arms of the HMOs. Drug coverage would not begin until 2006, although seniors next year will be able to purchase a drug discount card that officials said could reduce their pharmacy bills by 15 to 25%. The IRS has begun auditing the National Education Association, which has allocated millions of dollars to elect pro-education candidates while reporting on tax forms that it does not spend union dues on politics. The NEA has tax-exempt status as a union, but must report political expenses direct and indirect on its tax return. Some of those expenses could be considered taxable by the IRS. The IRS defines a political expense as one intended to influence the selection, nomination, election, or appointment of anyone to a federal, state, or local public office. The U.S.-appointed government in Iraq raided the offices of Al Arabiya Television on Monday, banned its broadcast from Iraq, and threatened to imprison its journalist. Media groups said the action called into question the future of a free press in the country. Al Arabiya said it would not fight the ban and would report on Iraq from its headquarters in Dubai. The Iraqi Governing Council banned the station, one of the Arab world's largest, from working in Iraq for broadcasting an audio tape a week ago of a voice it said belonged to Saddam Hussein. The U.S.-appointed council did not say how long the ban would be in effect. More IE America Network news after this.
Like most people, you've probably got a calendar or a day planner to help you keep track of important dates. But there are some things in life that we can't put on our calendars because we don't know when or if they'll happen. Things like emergencies, disasters, or even a fire. So prepare for the unexpected today by establishing a family disaster plan with help from your local Red Cross. When we come together, we become part of something bigger than us all. Help prepare your community by visiting redcross.org. The American Red Cross. Together, we can save a life.
Norway's prime minister cannot use his new bomb-proof car because Norway's state road authority says it's too heavy. The vehicle's been parked unused in a garage in Oslo since mid-October. Weighing in at around 4 tons because of armor plating and thick bulletproof windows, the car is twice as heavy as a standard BMW 760 model and nearly 90 pounds over the limit for registration by Norway's road authorities. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
This is Eric Muller reporting from Chopper 5.
Cut!
News happens fast. Can I afford to let a cold slow me down? Not up here. When I'm achy, with a stuffy nose and a sore throat, I take Advil Cold and Sinus. It's got the power of Advil to handle tough pain, plus a hard-working decongestant. That's why they call it Advil cold and sinus.
Quick, over to the highway.
I call it fast relief for a reporter on the fly.
For tough colds, advance to Advil cold and sinus. Use as directed.
Corporate greed is not some amorphous concept, but a human characteristic that comes with faces and names, such as Stephen Bird. He's CEO of Safeway, the sprawling supermarket giant. Bird is leading the charge in California to bust the wage scale and the union of his industry's employees. Supermarket work won't make you a millionaire, but thanks to the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, employees who are unionized can earn a slice of America's middle-class life. In California, baggers and clerks make from about $7.50 an hour to $18, depending on the job and length of service. It's this middle-class possibility that Bird and his cohorts are out to kill. Industry executives have been whacking at workers' earnings for some time. For example, $18 an hour produces an income of about $36,000 a year for full-time work. But grocery executives hold workers to between 24 and 32 hours a week, whacking their annual earnings to around $25,000 or less. Even that's too much for Bird, who's now demanding that workers' pay be frozen for 2 years, that their health care benefits be slashed, and that new employees be hired at a drastically lowered pay scale. Not only will the new workers be Walmartized into the category of working poor, but the chains would then have a huge incentive to simply off the experienced employees who are better paid, replacing them with this new tier of low-wage people. As one of the striking workers put it, "If we lose this fight, there go 70,000 jobs that no longer will be middle-class jobs." Especially infuriating is Bird's efforts to cut workers' health care, whining that they're getting Cadillac benefits. Yet Bird, who collected about $7 million in personal pay from Safeway last year, gets Rolls-Royce health care benefits for himself. This is Jim Hightower saying, I wonder if he'll be cutting his own pay in health care.
Brendan was spending the afternoon helping me pick out furniture for the new place.
The ladies are doing a little furniture shopping, are they?
That's scary. I hope you didn't make any choices without a professional.
Beanbag chairs for everybody.
God help us. Bearskin rug.
I put the car in swinger, baby.
On the IE America Radio Network. Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back to the nation's largest nationally syndicated daytime progressive talk show. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, and streaming across the world on the internet, radiopower.org, ieamericaradio.com, live365.com, archives at whiterosesociety.org. You can find it all at tomhartman.com. or iamericaradio.com. Welcome back to our program. Medea Benjamin is the founding director of the San Francisco-based human rights organization Global Exchange. Her books, reports, and articles have examined global issues of hunger and unequal development. She's an all-around great person and seems to be everywhere that if something's happening, she's there. Hey, welcome to the program, Medea.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
You, as I recall from the birthday party that you had when we were at that meeting in San Francisco, you now qualify for AARP membership. Is that right?
I do. Yes.
Yeah.
But you don't have to remind me of that.
Well, we just did an hour on this thing about this alternative organization and people tearing up their cards, and this bill was just passed this morning, and everybody, and just the absolute sellout of this organization. And I was wondering if your activism has extended into those realms, or if you're staying with these issues like the thing in Miami last week and so on that I wanted to talk to you about. But this is just kind of a
I certainly am supportive of those who are criticizing AARP, but I got my hands full right now because I'm also getting ready to go to Iraq on Saturday.
Oh, my goodness. Tell us about that.
Well, I'm taking a group of 10 people who are military families that either have loved ones serving in Iraq right now or have lost their loved ones serving in Iraq, and a couple of veterans of previous wars, both Vietnam and Gulf War One. Mm-hmm. And we're going to find out what's really happening on the ground and meet with Iraqis, all kinds of Iraqis, meet with the U.S. troops there, U.S. commanders, and come back and try to demand some accountability from Bush administration and from the U.N.
Boy, good luck.
That's a tall order, huh?
It's a huge order, and I so respect you for your being out there in the world. You are just so aggressively out. You were in Miami last week.
I was in Miami last week at the Free Trade Agreement of the Americas protest, and then I was also at Fort Benning, Georgia, for the effort to shut down the School of the Americas there.
Right. Yeah, I wanted to get to that in just a second. Tell us first about what happened in Miami. What was your experience of that?
Well, unfortunately, instead of concentrating on what was happening inside with the negotiations and being able to have some influence on those negotiations, we were forced, because of the incredible police presence and repression, to focus on what was happening on the outside, and it was really like a police state. You know, I've been to Iraq a couple of times in the last 6 months and felt like I was back there again, with the helicopters overhead and the tanks in the streets and the police and riot gear.
You know, $8 million of the $87 billion that was just allocated for Iraq went directly to the Miami Police Department, directly to help them do something about these protests that you were participating in.
Well, that's right. So somebody else is making those connections.
Yeah. So you were back in Iraq in a way. It's just amazing. So what you're seeing is this militarization of America, of the police here?
Well, that's right. And it's particularly frightening because I think that there's a subtext beneath all of this, which is to equate protesters with terrorists in the eyes of the American people, and then to justify the use of tanks and helicopters and riot gear and pepper spraying of peaceful, nonviolent protesters. So those two things are very dangerous and scary, and to feel your own country under occupation and moving very much in the direction of a police state is something that we've all got to speak out against.
Yes, loudly, aggressively, as often as we can, as much as we can. By the way, speaking to my listeners here, if you'd like to speak with Medea, or if you'd like to say hi, if you have a specific question, say congratulations. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. 1-800-825-5937 would welcome phone calls. The Occupation Watch Center in Iraq, part of Global Exchange that you helped create, is keeping tabs on how America conducts itself in Iraq. And, you know, progressives such as Dennis Kucinich have advocated getting out of Iraq almost immediately. The Bush administration has just announced its Plan C to get out of Iraq by June, just in time for the elections, without it looking like it's for the elections. How do you think that's going to play out? And what are the minefields here? Bad metaphor, but, you know, what are the potential problems here?
Well, there's a lot of them. One is, how is this Iraqi government going to be selected? And is it going to be in a process that really is leading to greater and greater democracy and representation? Or has the U.S. pretty much decided how that process is going to go, so that whoever is, quote, in charge are amenable to what the U.S. wants them to do? So it'll be kind of another version of this governing council that the U.S. hand-selected. And I should also add that this hand-selected governing council of 24 people is now making noises that they don't want to go away. They want to be somehow part of this new government as well. So
right.
Plus,
they're saying, we don't want to do things the way your Americans are saying we got to do them.
Well, some of them aren't, but they're also saying to the U.S., hey, you better want to keep us around, because we'll agree that you can keep your troops here, but who knows, if you have a more democratic process with a really independent Iraqi government, they might just tell you all to go home. Yeah. So the selection process is important, and what we're saying is that the U.S. can't be in charge of this transition because then it'll have no legitimacy in the eyes of many Iraqi people, that the U.N. has got to be brought in to oversee this transition.
Well, let's say that the...
Sorry, I was just going to say that that's on the political side, and then the other things we've got to watch out for is who's got the bank account. Is the bank account going to be turned over to Iraqis, or is the U.S. still going to keep control of that? And then finally, who is going to be in charge of security? They're building up this Iraqi security force, but it's under the command of the U.S., and what's going to happen when there's a political transition?
Hmm. Pardon me, I just got sidetracked there for just a second. But if we were to hand this thing over to the U.N., and the U.N. was to come in and say, okay, we're going to do free and fair elections here, in the finest tradition of free and fair elections, and allow open political discussion and an open vote, and the Iraqi people vote for an Islamic Republic or for a group of people who are going to install an Islamic Republic, what would the consequences of that be, do you think?
Well,
first of all, what do you think the probabilities of that are?
The possibilities are good in the sense that the majority of people are Shia. The issue to understand, though, is the majority of those Shia are not fundamentalists. They might want to have some elements of religious law within the Constitution. They might not be for 100% separation of church and state like some of us might like, but it also doesn't mean that it's going to be necessarily a fundamentalist government a la either Taliban in Afghanistan or even the hardline Iranians, because Iraq has been a much more secular state, a much more modern state, certainly in the past. So it's a danger, but it's a danger if the U.S. is there. It's a danger if the U.S. isn't there. The fact of the matter is 60% of the population is Shia Muslim, and they should be well represented in any democratic government.
Yeah, aren't both Indonesia and Malaysia Islamic states?
They're majority Islamic populations. It's different than being an Islamic state.
Yeah, I know, but isn't Islam actually part of their constitution like it is in some of the other northern African countries?
You said Indonesia and what else?
And Malaysia.
I don't think so. I think they're both secular states. In fact, I know they're both secular states.
Okay, good.
But certainly Indonesia is majority Muslim.
Yeah. Remarkable. So now the right is going on this rant about, liberals wanted us to get out of Iraq sooner. Now we're getting out of Iraq sooner. Now they're still complaining. Well, I guess you've expressed the vision that we're holding for this thing, of free and fair. It seems to me that we need to even go beyond the question of who's going to be running the show and who's going to control the bank account, also to who's going to own the oil. I mean, These are the issues
it's not just the oil, it's all the resources, because right now there's 200 state-owned enterprises that the U.S. government would like to see sold off to private companies and, of course, would like to see sold off to U.S. companies. Sure. So it's oil plus, 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 plus.
Right, and because of international law, we can't make those sales happen to the Bush cronies until the Constitution of Iraq has been amended to allow the sale of state-owned companies.
Well, right now, the U.S., through this governing council, has already gone ahead and changed the investment code, but businesses are worried about investing right now because they say that might not hold up under a new government.
And they can't get insurance.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
They can get insurance from the U.S. right now, which is one of the other things that we've been speaking out against, that the U.S. shouldn't be insuring businesses to go into a country that has no legally elected government.
Wait a minute. The United States government is acting as if it was an insurance agency for corporations that want to buy Iraqi businesses?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the U.S. has done this in places all over the world, providing insurance in very unstable places to entice U.S. businesses to go in there.
Remarkable. Kathy from Oregon's on the line. Hey, Kathy, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. You're talking with me and with Medea Benjamin.
Right. Well, I've been active up here for many years in the peace justice movement, et cetera. And I'd like to bring something to your attention in a book called Angels Don't Play This Harp, Advances in Tesla Technology by Gene Manning and Nick Begich, Ph.D. He's from Alaska. And this book talks about in the early 90s, it was about 1994 and 1995, there was a policy that allowed the Defense Department to start using non-lethal weapons on a broadened sense of what's called domestic adversaries. And they broadened this so that they could be used secretly as an experimental thing against people not only who are drug traffickers and terrorists, but also people who might be said to be opposing agendas of the U.S. government. So this collusion of the military and the police that you mentioned a few minutes ago in your thing, I think this is well documented if you look at a few paragraphs in this book that was written about 1994 and 95. So I was just wondering if you've done any research on these non-lethal weapons, otherwise known as crowd control or directed energy weapons.
Okay, Kathy, thanks for the question. Medea, if you can hold on until after this break for the answer with that, we'll be right back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll return.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. But don't take my word for it. Call us to get a free sampler. Yes, you heard me right, a free sampler. Two full-size bottles delivered to your doorstep for a $10 shipping cost only. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
This is Eric Muller reporting from Chopper 5.
Cut!
News happens fast. Can I afford to let a cold slow me down? Not up here. When I'm achy, with a stuffy nose and a sore throat, I take Advil Cold and Sinus. It's got the power of Advil to handle tough pain, plus a hard-working decongestant. That's why they call it Advil Cold and Sinus.
Quick, over to the highway.
I call it fast relief for a reporter on the fly.
For tough colds, advance to Advil Cold and Sinus. Use as directed.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glasters, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
Bill in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, posting on our message board. The doorbell rang, and I answered the door just as I finished posting how fed up I am with Bush. What a surprise. The guy standing in front of my door was very Republican look about him. His first words to me were, "Hi, I am your Republican precinct captain." Boy, has this guy got the wrong address, I said to myself. But not before I made it known to him that I consider Bush a menace to America. He started squirming and glancing around the front of my house. Our junkie responds. He says, "I remember when the only people we had to worry about meeting on our doorsteps were Jehovah's Witness crusaders. Now we have right-wingers. That's really scary." How to scare off door-to-door Republican visitors. And Klaus adds, "Well, answering the door naked can have the desired effect."
For Christ's sake, will you cover yourself?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Program, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. What are the positive visions of America's future held by activists on America's left? We're talking with Medea Benjamin today. And Medea, you want to answer Kathy's question about non-lethal weapons?
Well, I don't know the particular book she's talking about, although it sounds fascinating, but I certainly have been the victim of a lot of these non-lethal weapons for the last couple of years. So obviously there is a lot of research that's been put into it, and I think that what is particularly disturbing about what happened in Miami is that they have been touting it as a successful model of homeland security for dealing with protesters. And if this is our model, we're in big trouble. I want to reiterate that these were nonviolent protests, that there were lots of different ways to handle this situation, including the way the Mexicans did it when there was a protest in Cancun around the World Trade Organization. They put up lots of barriers to keep the protesters away from the meetings. And the police, they had plenty of them out there, but they were unarmed. They were very positive about always talking to the protesters to figure out how we can make sure you have a way to express your First Amendment rights, how you can symbolically show your opposition to these talks. And they even went so far as to provide camping spaces for the protesters to stay. There was a constant community liaison. It was a much, much better model than what we saw in Miami.
What you saw in Miami was a basic police state run amok.
Well, it was a police state run amok, and it seemed expressly designed to deny people their First Amendment rights to free speech.
Yeah. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number. Ed in Chicago is on the line. Ed, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, Tom. Is it Medea?
Yes.
Oh, a couple of things. I was shocked when I saw you can watch the news coverage of the Miami riot on democracynow.org, and I was horrified when I saw that. They looked like they were RoboCops. I mean, the Miami police.
It's like something out of Star Wars.
Yeah, it was just awful. But the reason I called is I wondered if you had read Gore Vidal's book, Dreaming War, Blood for Oil, and the Cheney Bush Junta. Are you familiar with that book?
Yes, I am. I thought it was a great book.
Right, and in there, and I think part of what's going on that's frustrating to me is it seems like the argument is based around, you know, why we went to Iraq and, you know, are we going to leave before we install democracy? Are we going to install democracy? And, I mean, my view is that that was never the purpose, that we're trying to establish permanent military bases in the region, and that what we're really after is the oil and minerals in what used to be southern Russia or southern Soviet Union.
Well, I think we're really after a lot of things. One is to assert more control in that region. Another is to plant a free market model that many in Iraq are now calling free market fundamentalism, because it has destroyed what existed of an Iraqi business class and is now laying the country totally open to invasion by foreign, mostly U.S. corporations, including, as we mentioned earlier, changing the laws before there's even an elected government. So Certainly this was never about weapons of mass destruction. It wasn't about fighting terrorism, and it wasn't about installing democracy, because we know that U.S. governments have had a unfortunately, long relationship with Saddam Hussein and many other dictators around the world. So, yes, we've got to look for other more plausible explanations, which is exerting U.S. control in the region and opening it up to corporate domination.
Yeah, this is the Project for a New American Century's agenda here. Thanks for the call, Ed. Medea, thank you very much for being on our program today. What's the website for your
OccupationWatch.org.
OccupationWatch.org. And people can find out more about what you're doing and what's going on with the organization there.
Thanks for having me on.
OccupationWatch.org. Thanks, Medea. Okay. Have a great day now. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back after this break.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
One of the world's most feared diseases seems to get its start in an unlikely place. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Muddy farms in southern China might not look like genetic engineering laboratories, but Mark Jerome Walters argues that's essentially what they are. Walters is a veterinarian and author of a new book called Six Modern Plagues. He says Chinese pig and duck farms are the breeding grounds for new strains of influenza. Walters says ducks and other water birds carry influenza viruses.
They contribute the genes to influenza. Even when humans come down with influenza, those genes, a big part of that bug, was borrowed from birds, aquatic birds, and also gulls.
Walter says southern China has thousands of family farms that raise ducks, pigs, and chickens in close, dirty quarters, with people living in the midst of these operations. He says that gives influenza viruses opportunities to mutate, sometimes into highly infectious forms.
You have a genetic engineering laboratory here in which the wild viruses mix with pig viruses. They go to humans. They can go back to pigs. We worry about deliberate genetic engineering, and I'm always a little bit stupefied to think that we are condoning massive genetic engineering laboratories and experiments right now, and we all condone it through the choices we make and the foods that we eat.
Influenza kills about 30,000 people each year in the United States, but experts worry about the potential for deadly new strains to emerge. The worst flu pandemic struck in 1918 and killed as many as 40 million people worldwide. Walters notes that the world now has six times more people. He says a similar event today could kill hundreds of millions, and it's likely to emerge from those Chinese duck farms. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with an important public service announcement about sleep deprivation. Many of you are not obtaining the 10 hours of nightly sleep necessary for true patriotic Americans like my husband Georgie because you're staying awake to listen to the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. This dangerous behavior puts you at risk of daytime blackouts, diminished worker productivity, ghastly hallucinations, and erectile dysfunction. So when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. This is Tom Hartman. Our program today is sponsored by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX. That's 1-800-511-6227. If you own a Macintosh or you are interested in owning a Macintosh or want to know more about Macintoshes, give them a call, 1-800-511-MAX, M-A-C-S. And the Organic Wine Company, 1-888-ECO-WINE. 1-888-ECO-WINE. And I got my email today. I got my talking points for right-wing talk show hosts. I guarantee you this is what they're going to be talking about. Tune across the spectrum. Anywhere in America, you will hear right-wing talk show hosts today say the following. This just in. The Commerce Department this morning announced that the economy grew at an astounding 8.2% in the third quarter of this year, the fastest pace in nearly two decades, and higher than previously reported. Thanks in large part to the president's pro-growth policies and tax relief, the economy is poised for sustained growth. You will probably hear that word for word, by the way. Now, you know, tracking this back, I mean, it started with Bush's first tax cut. And in 2001, and then his second one in 2002, and then his third one, where he promised us.
With a robust package of at least $550 billion in across-the-board tax relief, we will help create more than a million new jobs by the end of 2004.
Well, setting aside the fact that if you do the math on that, he's suggesting that we spend $550,000 a job. The kicker here. The bad news rolled into this good news is right in the news release that I got from the RNC. The 8.2% growth rate, more than double the 3.3% pace registered in the second quarter, represented the best showing since the first quarter of 1984, when the economy also surged at a 9% pace. Interesting. If you think back to 1984, what had happened was a few years earlier, Ronald Reagan had run the country into debt. Huge tax cuts, huge debt, and huge government spending. He increased government spending, massively increased government spending, as George Bush is doing. And he created this enormous debt. It led to such a severe recession that George Bush Sr. got booted out of office. It led to such a problem since Reagan got elected to his second term that he himself had to raise taxes 6 out of the 8 years that he was in office. I mean, you know, it's I think what they figured was that a Democrat would come in and have to deal with it, right? But no, Reagan had to raise taxes to avoid this thing from totally melting down. This is credit card economy, credit card economics. If I give you a credit card and I say, here, this credit card has $1 million spending limit. Let's see what kind of lifestyle you're going to have now. And by the way, you don't have to pay it off. Or you don't have to pay it off for 20 years. Or we'll make sure that your children pay it off. Or maybe even somebody else. I mean, you know, some people have the attitude, life is short, live now. Here's a credit card. It's got $1 million credit limit. Can you live like a millionaire? Sure. Ronald Reagan went on a credit card spending spree funded by debt. We're still paying interest payments on that. A couple $100 billion a year. We're still paying, you know, part of your tax dollars right now are covering the interest on the debt that Ronald Reagan ran up in order to get his little boomlet in 1984 to get himself reelected. This is the most cynical, crass kind of politics that a politician can engage in because it puts the nation at risk and it guarantees damage to the middle class. You And here we are again. Here we are again. And not only that, I mean, you know, where are the jobs? Where are the jobs that we have been promised? As the American Electronics Association reports, quote, nearly 750,000 people, close to 13% of all high-tech jobs in the United States, have been lost over the past 2 years, end quote. In 2000, the sector, quote, lost close to 540,000 and another 234,000 jobs in 2003, end quote. And they go on to say those, Center for American Progress goes on to say, those well-paying jobs are being transformed into lower-paying ones. And those who retain technology jobs in the U.S. say they are being offered lower salaries than in the past. Why is that? Because they can hire somebody in India to do the job. It's you know, very straightforward. Bill Clinton, Ronald Reagan, George Bush Sr., George Bush Jr., these guys tore down the barriers that for the better part of 200 years had protected American workers, and that most nations have you know, prior to this corporate con job, this corporate sales job that's been done all across America. They tore down the barriers that nations use to protect their domestic industries. And said, no, what's in the national interest doesn't count anymore. What's in the interest of the people doesn't count anymore. What counts is what's in the interest of the multinational corporations. If it's good, if it's good for General Motors, it's good for America. If it's good for Walmart, now the nation's largest corporation, it must be good for America. Well, it turns out what's good for Walmart is not what's good for America. What's good for Walmart is destroying America. What's good... In October, the manufacturing sector, just last month, lost 24,000 jobs, the 39th consecutive month of manufacturing job loss. And you look at it at the state level, the Boston Globe reports a spurt in third quarter growth was the best showing in two decades. This is what I just read you from the Republicans. However, Massachusetts unemployed are not seeing it. Altogether, the Boston Globe reports nearly 200,000 of Massachusetts' unemployed residents are experiencing a local job market that is still in a downturn. The state lost 31,700 non-farm jobs just between August and October, when payrolls in most every industry in the state stalled or shrank. Similarly, in Pennsylvania, the nonprofit Keystone Research Center reported the state's economy lost 3,900 jobs in October. And since June, the state of Pennsylvania, quote, has generated 52,600 fewer jobs than President Bush promised from the Jobs and Growth Plan. On top of that, Pennsylvania wages fell 4.1% from the first half of 2002 to the first half of 2003. So there's a lot more economic activity. You got corporations making a lot more money. The Dow is going up, more or less. But at the same time, the warning signs are there. Look at the price of gold. I predict gold, gold is easily going to hit 400 soon, and I predict it's going to go to 450, maybe even $500. It doesn't mean that gold is becoming more valuable. It means that the dollar is becoming worth less. Because you can buy gold in any denomination, you can buy gold with British pounds, you can buy gold with euros, you can buy gold with dinars, you can buy gold. And so the value of gold relative to a local currency indicates really the value of the currency. The price of gold relative to a local currency. And when we started this program, gold was around 280, 290, and it's now around 390, 395 per ounce. This is a huge danger sign. Look at the price of oil. Again, the price of oil going up. In part, that reflects supply and demand. In part, it reflects the value of the dollar. Not so much. I mean, because oil is an international commodity, and by and large, most nations have chosen to peg the dollar to. In fact, it's causing a lot of countries a problem. And on the other hand, it's helping some countries because now our, you know, Bush, in order to bail himself out of this economic mess, number one, he's doing this debt spending just like Reagan did. He's doing voodoo economics to get himself an economic bounce so he can get reelected in 2004, just like Reagan did. And second, he's allowing the dollar to fall internationally, which will make it, which will help our export business. It makes American products cheaper overseas. And, you know, in a vacuum, that might seem like a good thing, but it's really a lousy way to run trade policy. You don't run trade policy by playing with the value of your currency. There are too many things that can go wrong. You can end up with a 1929-style crash and Great Depression playing with your currency as a way of trying to create trade policy. You run trade policy by having a rational trade policy. And the trade policy that this White House has is entirely one driven by polls. Hey, we need some votes in Pennsylvania. Well, let's put a tariff on steel. And we don't believe in tariffs. We're not going to put tariffs on that stuff they sell in Walmart. No, tariffs, that's protectionist. That's anti-free trade. Except in Pennsylvania, Rick Santorum's in trouble. In the 2002 election, we got to help him out. Okay, we'll put on a tariff on steel. That'll get the steel workers in line. Well, now we got some problems in South Carolina. Well, what do they make there? Well, they make bras. Okay, we'll put a tariff on bras from China. I mean, they really did this. And the Chinese are really upset. They had, you know, 50-some-odd guys, either 37 or 55 guys, who were getting ready to get on an airplane to come to the United States to buy soybeans, and they got off the airplane when Bush announced that he was going to put a tariff on bras to protect a state he needs in next year's election. That's not a trade policy. You know, it was Lee Atwater, the guy who came up with George Bush Sr.'s, who designed the Willie Horton ads for George Bush Sr., who on his deathbed, dying of brain cancer, repented, apologized. There was a politician in South Carolina who had gone through electroshock therapy for depression, and Lee Atwater brought this out in a campaign against him. And when somebody asked him if he should apologize, Lee Atwater made the remark of something like, you know, why should I apologize to some guy who's been hooked up to jumper cables? And this politician, on his deathbed, Lee Atwater wrote him a letter begging him to forgive him. I really believe he got it as he was dying. But his theory, Lee Atwater's theory was that you don't just campaign the year before the election. You campaign 365 days a year for all 4 years that you're in office. It was called a perpetual campaign. And this administration has been running a perpetual campaign ever since they were installed. Every decision has been based on a political equation. This is the most poll-driven administration in the history of the United States. They don't just do polls on issues. They do focus groups on words. What word will have the most impact? Should we call this the Clean Sky Initiative or the Clear Sky Initiative? Should we call it an initiative or a proposal? Should we say that the Democrats' policies are flawed or failed? And they do these focus groups and they find out which words have the greatest emotional response. Actually, in some cases, you can hook people up to like lie detector kind of things, and you can actually measure emotional response, not just what they tell you. Hey, you know, I think that one really got me. You can measure their physiology. Newt came up with a list of words for people to use. I mean, this is nuts. Sherry in New Mexico has a question. Hey, Sherry, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I just would like to hear your response to, I mean, you were just recently talking about Walmart and how what's good for Walmart isn't good for the U.S., and I totally agree with you there. My question is on a more global level. You hear the argument that globalization helps developing countries. What is your perspective on that? I've just always been wanting to know what you thought about that.
Well, the reality is that over the short term, other countries, third world countries, usually get a bit of a boost, and then they crash. Mexico right now, poverty in Mexico right now is dramatically worse. That is, there's more poverty than there was before NAFTA. There was a little, you know, blip there for a while, and China now is going up. But basically what unfettered, laissez-faire globalization allows is it allows corporations to travel around the world strip mining human labor. It's like, you know, where can we get the cheapest human labor? And eventually, every place they touch gets corrupted. And also, it allows them to pit countries against each other in terms of who's going to have the lowest environmental standards. I mean, it just takes down all the rules. And so the argument that this is going to help the third world is a straw man argument, Sherry. It's an argument that is not supported by the facts, and that any careful look at the situation demonstrates that actually globalization over the long term harms third world countries by destroying their agricultural base, bringing people into the cities to work in sweatshops. Thanks for the call. This is Tom Hartman on IE. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is Eric Muller reporting from Chopper 5.
Cut!
News happens fast. Can I afford to let a cold slow me down? Not up here. When I'm achy, with a stuffy nose and a sore throat, I take Advil Cold and Sinus. It's got the power of Advil to handle tough pain, plus a hard-working decongestant. That's why they call it Advil Cold and Sinus.
Quick, over to the highway!
I call it fast relief for a reporter on the fly.
For tough colds, advance to Advil Cold and Sinus. Use as directed.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Would you like to know what the future holds? Call the psychic phone line today and talk with a real live psychic. Our psychics are fully licensed and guaranteed to know what the future holds. Just listen.
Hello, psychic phone line, may I help you?
Tell me what the future holds.
Good news.
I'll be rich and successful?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Quick question. Ever had a cold that only lasted 4 hours? Anybody? Then why take a 4-hour cold medicine? Instead, take Aleve Cold and Sinus. One pill has the strength to give you 12 hours of relief. No stuffy nose, no throbbing head, all day. So what's it going to be? 12 hours of relief or symptoms that interrupt your day? Do I really need to ask?
Try non-drowsy Aleve Cold and Sinus. One pill, 12 hours of relief. Use as directed.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
Anaconda.
Budgie.
Camel.
Dick Dick.
Emu.
Frog.
Gopher.
Hyena.
Iguana.
Jaguar.
Cuda Mundi.
Llama.
Minx.
Animal Narwhal. Talk. We talk Oscar. About what you do to your animals Whale. And what your animals do to you. Seal. Mark, Donna, and Dr. Brad answer all your animal Jack. Questions Zebra. From A to Z. Iguana. Sunday Jaguar. Nights on IE America Minx. Radio Narwhal. Network.
Ostrich. Right,
Penguin.
Whale.
Rooster.
Seal.
Tortoise.
Come, Firebats.
Show.
According to Abbas, immediately after Bush promised to speak with Sharon about the siege on Arafat, Bush said, quote, God told me to strike at Al-Qaeda, and I struck them. And then God instructed me to strike at Saddam, which I did. When God specifically whispers in someone's ear, I want you to go kill those people, and they go ahead and kill somebody. What do we do with those folks? We arrest them. They are jailed. In some instances, executed. We immediately identify them as crazy. You know, Ashcroft is going to say,
wait a second, George. God has been talking to me. God told me. Not you. God told me. These people are crazy.
They're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday, from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Standard Time, on IE America Radio Network.
They're coming to take me away.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
There's a natural mystic blowing through the air. If you listen carefully,
welcome back. Moving toward a bright and sparkling future by returning democracy to the United States of America. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Our junkie in our chat room says the Titanic is what Bush is doing to us. You know the old joke about the card player who all his life had professionally played poker, and one day he's on this cruise ship. I guess you know the punchline already. And he pulls a royal flush, and he goes, oh, this is incredible. My luck must just be extraordinary here on this ship, the Titanic. And that's kind of where we're at. Ed in Dayton, Ohio, is on the line. Hey, Ed, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. What's on your mind?
Hello. Oh, I was just calling because you were talking about all of that sort of nomenclature tweaking that Gingrich and those people have been doing, and how they use that to control the dialogue. And it reminded me of something I saw in Covert Action Quarterly, which is on their website, mediafilter.org, that outlined all of the huge amounts of money that are directed and orchestrated by conservative philanthropies and think tanks, and how they use that to basically transform the range of political thinking that's considered mainstream in America. And these people have been at this for a very long time, and very consistently in a very orchestrated way, using vast amounts of resources to control what we think.
Yeah, and what's really scary about it, Ed, is that they actually think that they're doing the right thing. I mean,
they do. They believe it.
Yeah, these are the political heirs to Alexander Hamilton, who at the first Constitutional Convention argued that aristocracy was the only really truly stable form of governments, and we couldn't afford to really take the risk of a democracy. John Adams, the Federalist John Adams.
One of them is called the Federalist Society, in fact.
I know, John Adams was a Federalist, and he referred to the average people as the rabble. I mean, the whole thing was to keep off the rabble. Good point, Ed. And David O. What was the guy's name who wrote who came over to the other side? I'm missing it. I'll bring it back on the other side of the hour. Anyhow, Ed, thanks for the point. I appreciate it. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. You're in the Truth Arena.
listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network, check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
I get things in my mind and I say, let's try this.
Hey,
and
there's Nancy in the background.
Nancy.
Oh,
Nancy.
Am I on the air? Oh.
Hello.
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 You're sorry you're on the air?
I'm glad I didn't say something I really shouldn't have said.
Really?
You should have heard what she was telling me a minute ago.
Wow.
Bite me, doughboy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. The Senate gave final congressional approval Tuesday to the most sweeping changes to Medicare since its creation in 1965, including a new prescription drug benefit for 40 million older and disabled Americans. The 54-44 vote sends the bill to George W. Bush, who will sign it into law. Supporters said the $395 billion measure, which gives private insurers a large new role in health care for seniors, was a long overdue change for the 38-year-old Medicare program. Opponents on both sides of the aisle complained that the bill was a giveaway to insurers and drug companies. Senator Edward Kennedy said it will dump seniors in the cold arms of the HMOs. Drug coverage would not begin until 2006, although seniors next year will be able to purchase a drug discount card that officials said could reduce their pharmacy bills by 15 to 25%. The government has freed 20 prisoners from its high-security prison for foreign terror suspects in Cuba, bringing the total release to more than 80, and plans to send dozens more home soon. The next batch, however, will probably get out of the Guantanamo Bay prison only if their governments promise to continue to imprison and investigate them. The latest releases stem from negotiations that were sped up after American allies complained the Bush administration was taking too long to resolve the cases of hundreds of foreigners captured in the global war on terrorism. The Pentagon said Monday it had transferred 20 prisoners on Friday, bringing to 88 the number who have left the facility since it opened in January 2002. The U.S.-appointed government in Iraq raided the offices of Al Arabiya Television on Monday, banned its broadcast from Iraq, and threatened to imprison its journalists. Media groups said the action called into question the future of a free press in the country. Al Arabiya said it would not fight the ban and would report on Iraq from its headquarters in Dubai. The Iraqi Governing Council banned the station, one of the Arab world's largest, from working in Iraq for broadcasting an audio tape a week ago of a voice it said belonged to Saddam Hussein. The U.S.-appointed council did not say how long the ban would be in effect.
Like most people, you've probably got a calendar or a day planner to help you keep track of important dates. But there are some things in life that we can't put on our calendars because we don't know when or if they'll happen. Things like emergencies, disasters, or even a fire. So prepare for the unexpected today by establishing a family disaster plan with help from your local Red Cross. When we come together, we become part of something bigger than us all. Help prepare your community by visiting redcross.org. The American Red Cross. Together, we can save a life.
A wild melee in Golden Gate Park left two people injured, a dog with a bullet wound, and a horse badly mauled. It happened Sunday when a woman illegally let her pit bull dog off its leash and the dog attacked a mounted policeman's horse. The cop was tossed to the ground, the dog owner was kicked in the face by the horse took off with the dog in pursuit. The cop was treated for injuries, the woman suffered head injuries, the horse was recovering, and the dog was picked up by animal control. This is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Hey, what is it?
I realize I love you.
But as long as you're with Jessica, there can never be anything between us.
Cass, there's no need to cry. Besides, I've got really great news.
You're leaving Jessica?
No. I just saved a load of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico. I saved. I thought that meant something to you.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Corporate greed is not some amorphous concept, but a human characteristic that comes with faces and names, such as Stephen Bird. He's CEO of Safeway, the sprawling supermarket giant. Bird is leading the charge in California to bust the wage scale and the union of his industry's employees. Supermarket work won't make you a millionaire, but thanks to the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, employees who are unionized can earn a slice of America's middle-class life. In California, baggers and clerks make from about $7.50 an hour to $18, depending on the job and length of service. It's this middle-class possibility that Bird and his cohorts are out to kill. Industry executives have been whacking at workers' earnings for some time. For example, $18 an hour produces an income of about $36,000 a year for full-time work. But grocery executives hold workers to between 24 and 32 hours a week, whacking their annual earnings to around $25,000 or less. Even that's too much for Bird, who's now demanding that workers' pay be frozen for 2 years, that their health care benefits be slashed, and that new employees be hired at a drastically lowered pay scale. Not only will the new workers be Walmartized into the category of working poor, but the chains would then have a huge incentive to simply off the experienced employees who are better paid, replacing them with this new tier of low-wage people. As one of the striking workers put it, "If we lose this fight, there go 70,000 jobs that no longer will be middle-class jobs." Especially infuriating is Bird's efforts to cut workers' health care, whining that they're getting Cadillac benefits. Yet Bird, who collected about $7 million in personal pay from Safeway last year, gets Rolls-Royce health care benefits for himself. This is Jim Hightower saying, "I wonder if he'll be cutting his own pay in health care."
What do you think I like about communing with nature as much as I do, being on the tractor as much time as I do, or spending time with the animals?
Spitting diesel into the ozone layer? Yeah, you're at one with nature.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature, and you will atone.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman radio program on the IE America Radio Network. Our show brought to you by Small Dog Electronics and the Organic Wine Company. This Corey Farley wrote an absolutely wonderful column in the Reno Gazette Journal, Pending the Freezing of Hell. And it's called Things You Have to Believe to Be a Republican Today. And just a marvelous list. And I want to give absolute credit to Corey Farley, Reno Gazette Journal. It was published on the 21st of this month. And the website is rgj.com for the newspaper. He says, being a drug addict is... these are the things you have to believe to be a Republican today. Being a drug addict is a moral failing and a crime, unless you're a conservative talk show host, in which case it's an illness and you need our prayers for your recovery. You must believe, if you're a Republican, that the United States should get out of the United Nations and that our highest national priority is enforcing United Nations resolutions against Iraq. You, if you're a Republican, you must believe that the government should relax regulation of big business and big money, but crack down on individuals who use marijuana to relieve the pain of illness. If you're a Republican, you must believe standing tall for America means firing your workers and moving their jobs to China or India. If you're a Republican, you must believe that a woman can't be trusted with decisions about her own body, but multinational corporations can make decisions affecting all mankind without regulation. If you're a Republican, you must believe that Jesus loves you and shares your hatred of gays and Hillary Clinton. If you're a Republican, the best way to improve military morale, you must believe, is to praise the troops in speeches while slashing veterans' benefits and combat pay. If you are a Republican, or aspire to be one, you must believe that group sex and drug use are degenerate sins. Unless, of course, you run for governor of California as a Republican. If you're a Republican, you must believe that a good way to fight terrorism is to belittle our longtime allies, then demand their cooperation and money. You must believe, if you're a Republican, that HMOs and insurance companies have the interest of the public at heart. You know, I should add to this, to Corey Farley's column, I'd say if you're a conservative, because there are Democrats who believe these things just as much as there are Republicans. To acknowledge his column in order to be a Republican, he says, there's a great list he's compiled. It goes on. You must believe that HMOs and insurance companies have the interest of the public at heart, that providing health care to all Iraqis is sound policy, but providing health care to all Americans is socialism. If you're a Republican, or I would add even a conservative Democrat, you must believe that global warming and tobacco's link to cancer are junk science, but creationism should be taught in schools. You must believe that Saddam was a good guy when Reagan armed him, a bad guy when Bush's daddy made war on him, a good guy when Cheney did business with him, and a bad guy when Bush needed a we-can't-find-bin-Laden diversion. If you're a Republican, you must believe that a president lying about an extramarital affair is an impeachable offense. But a president lying to enlist support for a war in which thousands die is solid defense policy. You must believe that the public has a right to know about Hillary Clinton's cattle trades, but George Bush's driving record is none of our business. What Bill Clinton did in the 60s is of vital national interest, but what Bush did in the 80s... like his insider trading deals, you know, is irrelevant. Or his cocaine arrest. Trade with Cuba is wrong, you must believe, if you're a Republican, because that country is communist. But trade with China and Vietnam is vital to the spirit of international harmony. Great column by Corey Farley, Penning the Freezing of Hell, the Reno Gazette Journal. Sugary foods and birth defects are linked. Eating sugary or highly processed foods during pregnancy may increase the risk of birth defects, research suggests. U.S. researchers compared the diet of 454 mothers of children with neural tube defects, like spina bifida, with 462 mothers who had healthy babies. They found the risk of defects doubled in women who ate lots of foods which gave a quick sugar hit, and among obese women it quadrupled. This was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. Thought you'd want to know. I mean, it falls into the category of worth passing along. There have been studies in the past that I've read that suggest that neural tube defects like spina bifida are associated with lack of folic acid, which is found in greens. And that's one of the reasons why they're mandating folic acid supplementation now to a lot of foods. But this seems to go way beyond this. This seems to indicate that just getting a sugar blast is enough to do it. Of course, this was published by the BBC. If any American company had tried to publish this as a news story, even though it was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, they would immediately probably have one of the sugar companies on their tail. And being in love is a drug, scientists say. Just to wrap up the science news here for the beginning of the program, being in love is a drug, scientists say. This also from the BBC. Being in love is physically similar to the buzz of taking drugs and also has withdrawal symptoms. Dr. John Marsden says dopamine, which, by the way, is the primary neurotransmitter associated with cocaine, speed, caffeine, and Ritalin. Says that dopamine, the drug released by the brain when it is aroused, as in fallen in love, has similar effects on the body and mind as cocaine or speed. Attention and lust really is like a drug, he says. It leaves you wanting more. He says that, however, in this case, the hit can last 3 to 7 years. I think it can last a lot longer. People work on relationships, and they can keep it going. The research also suggests sex is booby-trapped to make partners bond. According to the research, the more the two people have sex together, the more likely they are to bond. So, good news, I suppose. So that in the isn't it interesting category. I wanted to get back to answering Sherry's question about globalization, just with a brief rant here, about foreign trade. The problem, I think, is that most Americans nowadays don't understand what Americans understood very clearly during the days of Dwight Eisenhower and Jack Kennedy, and all the way back to the founding of this country. And that is the reason why we have international trade to begin with. And Adam Smith talked about this in Wealth of Nations, which was published in 1776. And the example that he used, and it's been years since I read it, and so I may have one of these off, but my recollection of his example is wool, cheese, and wine. And if you've got one nation that has a lot of sheep and they make really good wool and they make sweaters, and you've got another nation that has a lot of really good cows and they make great cheese, and you've got another nation that has vineyards and they make great wine, well, you got one country where everybody's wearing a sweater, but they don't have any cheese to eat, and they don't have any wine to drink, and you got another nation where everybody's eating cheese all the time, but they're cold, and they're not very happy, and you got another nation where everybody's drinking wine all the time, and they probably therefore, you know, don't so much mind the fact that they don't have any wool or cheese, but they'd still like some. And so you get these three countries together, and the country that makes good wool says to the other two, "Hey, you know, you want some of our wool?" And they go, "Yeah, hey, we, you know." The cheese-making country says, "We'll give you some cheese in exchange for your wool." And the wine-making country says, "We'll give you some wine in exchange for you." And they all get, they start trading. And it broadens the scope of products available to people and thus enhances quality of life. Now, that's the upside of international trade and something that's been recognized from day one. I have here on my desk by Jacob E. Cook the biography of Tench Cox. The book is called Tench Cox, T-E-N-C-H-C-O-X-E, and the Early Republic. Most people have never heard of Tench Cox. Tench Cox was America's first entrepreneur. Well, not America's first. You could say, I mean, there were a lot of entrepreneurs early on, and probably America's first and most first famous entrepreneur was Ben Franklin. But Tench Cox was a small businessman who owned a number of small businesses and did trade here and there and made a lot of money importing things from England and exporting things to Europe during the Revolutionary era. And he was friends with most of the founders and the framers. And after the Constitution was written, he became a one-man lobbyist. Actually, this was before the Constitution. It was after the Articles of Confederation were written, because his first successful lobbying effort was in 1784, and we didn't get the Constitution until 1787. And in 1784, he got passed through the Congress of the United States, operating at the time under the Articles of Confederacy. He got passed the first protective trade tariff. See, the way it works is, if you have another country that has a product that you think importing it is going to harm your country in some way, for example, alcohol or opium. I mean, back in those days, we imported opium. And, you know, you could buy it in drugstores in the United States right up until the 1920s, and it was the 1920s when cocaine was made illegal as well. And pot, as I recall, I think they all came along with Harry Anslinger and Reefer Madness and all that, you know, freaking out. And the whole prohibition movement. But in any case, if you had a product coming into the country that you thought was not good for people, or you had a product coming into the country that was not good for your domestic industries, for your businesses, which was Tench Cox's concern. He didn't care if people smoked tobacco or drank, you know, ate opium or anything like smoked opium. But he was concerned about protecting the businesses in America. And Jefferson writes about this extensively as well, that you use, it's just like in business. If somebody says to you, how much will it cost for that product, and it's a product you don't really want to make, you don't say, nah, I really don't want to make that. Say you're in the business of making widgets and they want a green widget, and you don't make green widgets, and they say, well, how much for a green widget? You don't say, well, I won't sell you a green widget. You say, I'll sell it to you for the normal price plus $10. In other words, you tell them how much it's going to cost. And that might discourage them, or they might want it really bad, and they'll pay the extra $10. Well, similarly, countries don't say, no, it'll harm our local industries to import cheap goods from overseas. You don't say no. You say, here's what it's going to cost you. So you don't put up barriers to trade in terms of laws that say you can't import these things. You put into place, as Tench Cox did in 1784, you put into place trade tariffs, taxes, where if it costs $1 to make a pair of shoes here and it costs 10 cents to make a pair of shoes overseas, you tax it by 90 cents when it comes in, and then people get to make their choice. Very, very simple, very straightforward. And in the absence of these tariffs, we are now seeing this disaster, this absolute disaster of international trade being played out the way it is. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
We'll be back with more music, but first a look at weather. Here's meteorologist Tom Sparks.
Thanks, Chad. There's a front moving in from the south, which is going to mix with warm air, giving us the distinct possibility for showers over the next few days. In fact, some of them are going to be big soakers, let me tell you. However, if you're planning any outdoor activities for the weekend, I have good news.
So it's going to be clear?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See how much you could save. Visit Geico.com. Geico, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune in to tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Tia Carrera is on the front in Playboy. I think what you have done is give a little more license to people who have a few more years on them.
Probably. A few more years on them.
Well,
a few more years on them.
No, I'm talking about now.
Like the tread on a tire.
Yeah, never mind. I can't make it better.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
On the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
What would you do if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song. I will try not to sing out of key. Yeah. Oh, baby, how do you
and welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Talk radio for the rest of us. Our program sponsored by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, and the Organic Wine Company, 1-888-ECO-WINE. Environmental tests list the most contaminated foods. This is the New York Times News Service. The top 12 fruits and vegetables that are contaminated by pesticides. This the Environmental Working Group came up with this thing. And they did over 100,000 lab tests. And actually, I guess they examined over 100,000 tests conducted by the Department of Agriculture and Food and Drug Administration, with additional testing done on organic produce by the state of California. And the top 12 most contaminated fruits and vegetables are grapes, nectarines, peaches, pears, potatoes, red raspberries, spinach, strawberries, apples and peppers, and celery. Was that 12? I didn't count. Oh, and cherries is on the list, too. The least contaminated, here's the least contaminated. Asparagus, avocados, bananas, cauliflower, corn, kiwi, mangoes, onions, papayas, pineapples, and sweet peas. That's good to know. So, and they point out that because of the widespread availability of organic produce, or organic wine, in the case of one of our sponsors here, people can actually do something about this knowledge. And they say that washing will not change the rankings because the samples that they did, that they did all this research on, were washed or peeled. So, the pesticides get into the products, into the plant, into the food as it's made. The states, 14 states, and a number of cities, including New York, San Francisco, this is from the Associated Press, and Washington, D.C., are seeking a court injunction to short-circuit a measure by the Environmental Protection Agency before it goes into effect next month. It goes into effect the day after Christmas, December 26th. And what is this? What is this wonderful thing that the Bush administration is bringing us? A new surprise, a new Christmas present, my friends. Yes, George Bush has a Christmas present, but it's not for you and me. It's for his friends in the polluting industries. The Environmental Protection Agency is going to loosen Clean Air Act regulations effective December 26. As New York State Attorney General Elliot Spitzer said, and I quote, "If these rules go into effect even temporarily, utilities will get the green light to spew forth pollution and violate the clear meaning of a statute that has for decades protected the quality of the air that we breathe," end quote. Unfortunately, Attorney General Elliot Spitzer doesn't realize that in order for the cons to get reelected, they have to sell themselves to this particular devil, and that the quality of our air, the number of people who die of cancer and asthma, is really just not a consideration for this administration. Because, you know, actually people get cancer, it's more money for Bill Frist's hospital business. But anyhow, these states, these idealists, New York, San Francisco, Washington, D.C., a bunch of northeastern states, New York, Connecticut, Illinois, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New Mexico, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Vermont, and Wisconsin. They're going ahead. They're going to file a lawsuit in the U.S. Court of Appeals in Washington, D.C. Good luck. Good luck. This is the Tom Hartman Program, Truth and Common Sense in Broadcasting. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
One of the world's most feared diseases seems to get its start in an unlikely place. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Muddy farms in southern China might not look like genetic engineering laboratories, but Mark Jerome Walters argues that's essentially what they are. Walters is a veterinarian and author of a new book called Six Modern Plagues. He says Chinese pig and duck farms are the breeding grounds for new strains of influenza. Walters says ducks and other water birds carry influenza viruses.
They contribute the genes to influenza. Even when humans come down with influenza, those genes, a big part of that bug, was borrowed from birds, aquatic birds, and also gulls.
Walters says southern China has thousands of family farms that raise ducks, pigs, and chickens in close, dirty quarters, with people living in the midst of these operations. He says that gives influenza viruses opportunities to mutate, sometimes into highly infectious forms.
You have a genetic engineering laboratory here in which the wild viruses mix with pig viruses. They go to humans. They can go back to pigs. We worry about deliberate genetic engineering, and I'm always a little bit stupefied to think that we are condoning massive genetic engineering laboratories and experiments right now, and we all condone it through the choices we make and the foods that we eat.
Influenza kills about 30,000 people each year in the United States, but experts worry about the potential for deadly new strains to emerge. The worst flu pandemic struck in 1918 and killed as many as 40 million people worldwide. Walters notes that the world now has six times more people. He says a similar event today could kill hundreds of millions, and it's likely to emerge from those Chinese duck farms. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, your animalological super information highway, helping you with your pets. Every Sunday night, we take your calls, help your pets, always give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like from It Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, on the IE America Radio Network.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
The best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You can get it if you really want. You can get it if you really want. You can get it if you really want. But you must try, try and try, try and try. You'll succeed at last.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Yeah, we can get democracy back, and we will try and try and try, regardless of what our friend George
Your fate
has to
will
say.
Depend on your actions.
Oh, it will? Oh.
Do not destroy oil wells.
Okay.
A source of wealth that belongs to the Iraqi people.
Okay. Yeah, sorry about that. Yes, we'll be very careful. Yeah, but wait a minute. If the oil wells belong to the Iraqi people, does that mean that the American oil belongs to the American people? I don't think so, because I think that George W. once tried to own some of that oil. Of course, he went bankrupt in the process, or went out of business. Well, sort of. I mean, Bin Laden family bailed him out. But we don't, you know. Okay, you get it. Anyhow, I wanted to talk in this final half hour of the program today. And feel free to call, by the way, 1-800-TALK-YES if there's some direction that you want to go off on or if there's something on your mind. But I wanted to talk about this attack that this administration is continuing that really started full bore, full tilt boogie under the Reagan administration, attack against the middle class. And I have really come to believe that these guys don't want there to be a strong middle class, because a strong middle class represents a lot of uppity people who are going to advocate for what's best for them and make it harder for an aristocracy, a corporate aristocracy, to rule this nation. And they would rather have us frightened. They would rather have us in fear of our jobs and our future, our livelihood, than they would have a strong middle class. I mean, it's just, I know that sounds paranoid, but you get, for example, here's a quote from the Wall Street Journal, talking about Alan Greenspan. The economy continued to sizzle last month, this is from a couple of years ago, but cast off few sparks indicating overheating, and with Mr. Greenspan having told Congress earlier in the week that he continues to remain vigilant for any warning signs that might force him to boost interest rates later this month, the markets are examining the tiniest details of Friday's releases for any glimpse of inflation. And then they go on to talk about the fact that raises are not escalating and are actually possibly de-accelerating. Quote, raises, you know, pay. It's not going up. It's, in fact, going down. And the quote from the Wall Street Journal isn't enough to pacify anti-inflation hawks. They look for advanced signs that wage increases will begin. Mr. Greenspan, for one, scrutinizes worker insecurity. He has said in recent weeks, I'm quoting from the Wall Street Journal, he has said in recent weeks that he believes a pervasive fear of unemployment has kept wage demands modest. But he is worried that the robust labor market would soon embolden workers to demand more. And we're just, in my opinion, we're seeing this thing being played out all over again. Just all over again here. Now, the Bush administration has just won a Capitol Hill battle, this according to Reuters, over proposed changes to U.S. overtime work rules that are supported by business and opposed by labor. The AP notes critics of the new rules say they could lead to 8 million Americans losing their eligibility for overtime. And, you know, this should be front page news. I mean, you have a business section of the paper. Where's the labor section? You hear the business news on the radio. Where's the labor news? Well, this is the labor news, and it's that the American laborers are getting screwed by this administration. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. And J.R. in Victorville, California, is on the line. Hey, J.R., welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, Tom. I've been listening to your program over the last couple of days, and I've been reading a little bit of what you've written on the Internet. I can't say I'm well-versed yet, but I keep hearing over and over this theme about we lost our democracy, we lost our democracy. and your definition of fascism and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I've read a lot of the Founding Fathers. I can't say I've read everything they've written, but I'd never heard them speak favorably of democracy, and yet you keep saying we've lost the democracy our founders gave us. I would wanted a little clarification on that, if I could.
Sure, J.R. The first of all, the word democracy, the word and the word republic were essentially interchangeable until 1787. You read Federalist Number 10. I believe it was I'm quite sure it was Federalist Number 10. Was the one where James Madison decided to change the dictionary definitions of these words, and the reason why was because he was trying to sell the Constitution. You know, him and Hamilton, who and Mason, but mostly Hamilton and Madison were writing the Federalist Papers, and it was this long dialogue to try and promote the Constitution. And basically, what they wanted to say was, don't worry. You had the Hamilton faction who wanted. You know, Hamilton was essentially in favor of a form of American aristocracy, a ruling class at least, an elite. And then you had the Jeffersonian faction that said, you know, let's have an absolutely open democracy where everyone can participate. And in fact, in many states, after the Constitution was signed, both women and people of color could vote. I mean, there was no federal prohibition against it until the early 19th century, actually. And so anyhow, Madison lays out in Federalist Number 10 this argument that you guys who are worried about mob rule, you don't have to worry about that because that's what a pure democracy is. And we're not going to have a pure democracy. And you guys who are, on the other hand, worried that people aren't going to participate, that we're going to have some kind of aristocracy, you don't have to worry because we're not going to do that. What we're going to do is we're going to create a republic. And so what has come down through the years is this idea that we're a republic and not a democracy. But as I said, the words were absolutely interchangeable in all the dictionaries prior to that, and for at least probably 15 or 20 years after that, and still largely are. I mean, look up the word democracy in the dictionary. And it's shorthand for a form of government where people participate. I could say we live in a, and more accurately, I could say we live in a constitutionally limited democratic republic. That really is our form of government. But it's frankly easier to say democracy. And then Newt Gingrich came along about 20 years ago and said, hey, people are using the word democracy way too much. You know, when he came up with his word list. And, you know, the word, because the problem is the word democracy sounds too much like Democrat. And in fact, I mean, that's why Jefferson started the Democratic Republicans, which is now known as the Democratic Party, in reaction to the Federalists, because the Federalists were going overboard in the direction of aristocracy, the strong federal government. And Jefferson felt that there needed to be more democracy in our republic. And there were actually two factions. There was the Democratic faction, the Republican faction. Jefferson brought them together in the 1790s into the Democratic Republicans. And then in the 1820s, as I recall, they changed their name to just the Democrats.
Hey, Tom?
So, yeah. J.R.
Did you say that there was federal rules against women in different groups voting?
Yes.
There's never been a federal rule against women or different groups voting that I could ever find.
Well, then read the 14th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, because in the second clause of the 14th Amendment, it says that electors shall be chosen for Congress from all the male citizens of the United States. This was the biggest. Susan B. Anthony went ballistic about this. It was the 14th Amendment was passed to free the slaves, and Susan Anthony and Susan Cady Stanton, as I recall, vigorously campaigned against the 14th Amendment because it has the word male in it. And it defined for the first time at the federal level a law that said that women did not have rights under the Constitution, only men did.
So you're saying the 14th Amendment specifies that only men can vote?
That's how it ended up getting interpreted. I'll read you the amendment. Hang on just a second here. Amendment 14. Okay, you know, it starts out, of course, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and the state wherein they reside. That would cause you to think we're talking about human beings. Then it says, no state shall make or enforce any law that shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. You would think, again, they're talking about humans. That has been interpreted to talk about corporations since 1886, and that was the first stealing of democracy, in my opinion. Then they go on to say, representatives shall be apportioned among the several states according to their respective numbers, counting the whole number of persons in each state, excluding Indians not taxed, on the right of state numbers. Ah, here we are. Or the members of the legislature thereof is denied to any of the male inhabitants of such state being 21 years of age. And citizens of the United States, or in any way abridged except punctuation by rebellion or other crime, the basis of blah, 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 in proportion which the number of such male citizens shall bear to the whole number of male citizens 21 years of age in such state. That's Section 2 of the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution.
Right.
And yes, the Supreme Court then, in the Bradwell versus State case in 1872, pointed to the second section of the 14th Amendment, and in that case ruled that Sarah Bradwell, who had wanted to practice law in Chicago and had been thrown out by a judge who told her she couldn't because she was a woman, the Supreme Court ruled that women did not have rights under the Constitution, and that was not reversed until Roe v. Wade, which was about whether or not women have access to the Fourth Amendment.
Well, was the can you tell me what part of the Constitution was changed when women started getting elected to the federal offices?
I don't know when women started getting elected to the federal offices.
Well,
I mean,
there was women elected to federal office prior to the 18th Amendment, as you know, right?
Well, yeah, there were women who were voting in the states prior to the passage of the 14th Amendment. There were women who were voting in the United States in the 1790s,
the Constitution never said women couldn't vote. It never specified who could or who couldn't vote.
That's right.
To make that decision.
That's right. I agree. The Constitution also didn't say that people of color couldn't vote, and there were freed slaves, and there were people of all different kinds of, you know, races, ethnicities, genders, whatever, who were voting in various states. What the Constitution said was that the states could make up those rules, and the states did make up those rules.
Exactly. The states could, whoever could vote for the most numerous office of the state could vote for federal offices.
Yeah, and then the three-fifth rule that everybody points to, where it said that basically in the southern states that the slaves would be considered three-fifths of a person, it was for the purpose of defining how many representatives would be sent to Congress, and that was really a power move on the part of the Southerners who wanted to have, even though their state laws were preventing their slaves from voting, they wanted to have them counted so that they could have more representatives in Congress.
Right. The Constitution never said that they were three-fifths of a person. Otherwise,
no.
Where it says that the Indians have no representation, you would be saying that the Indians were not persons at all, which the Constitution never said that.
That's right.
I agree that's a misinterpretation, or at least has been a misinterpretation of the way that people look at the Constitution. But regardless of that, I mean, it's interesting to talk about, because it sounds like you've done a lot of work on this, but
I wrote a book about it. It's called Unequal Protection.
I've been trying to read through the excerpts that you had on the internet. Maybe I'll even have to purchase the book, so I'll have it as a reference point. But
that would be great. I mean, you know, it's free in libraries too.
I don't mind paying for something if it's something I think might be worthy to have in my library. Want to dispute that Jefferson was this? I'm just trying to make sure clearly this idea of democracy.
Mm-hmm.
When you say that our democracy is stolen, and yet I think we've become more democratized than we were at the time of the founding, and yet in the sense of the way I understand the word democracy, and you say we're less. Hopefully we could resolve. Maybe it'll take more than one conversation. I see it as we are more of a democracy today than we were at the time of the founding. And when you say we've lost our democracy, I'm trying to put my finger on if you could just give me a few things to put my finger on that says we have less democracy today.
Sure. First of all, the lost our democracy phrase is one that I think you're getting from Jim Hightower's promos, you know, his book, We've Lost Our Democracy and We Want It Back. That's him, not me.
Well, I thought I heard it right at the beginning of your program, Get Our Democracy Back.
Well, yeah, I may well have said it. And I do believe that we need to take our democracy back from the corporations. I agree with you that the United States in many ways is more democratic now than it was in 1787. And certainly it's more democratic now than it was under the reign of John Adams under the Alien and Sedition Acts. Mm-hmm. But the problem was that the founders put into place very specific rules that democracy was for people. It was for we the people. It was not for, in fact, Jefferson writes about, you know, the dangers of excessive wealth to democracy. And I can give you this specific, I can't right now, I don't have it right in front of me, but I can, just this last weekend, I'm working on a book on this topic, and I was going through Jefferson's letters, and he talks about democracy frequently in his letters, as just, he just simply uses the word democracy as shorthand for the American system of government.
Well, let me ask this, maybe it'll help. If the corporation, if you could remove the phrase that corporations are being treated as persons, would we then have our democracy back?
I think that we would have and a whole awful lot of, we would have the ability to get it back. I mean, consider this law. This was a Wisconsin law that wasn't repealed until 1954. They finally discovered it on the books. But this was a typical law that every state in the Union had laws like this in place. When Thomas Jefferson proposed an amendment to the Constitution that would ban monopolies in commerce, then he was told by Madison in their correspondence, Jefferson was in France, he was told by Madison, you don't have to worry about that. We don't even have the word corporation in the Constitution. The states have all have all done that. And there was a very specific, no corporation doing business in this state shall pay or contribute or offer consent or agree to pay or contribute directly or indirectly any money, property, free services of its officers or employees or anything of value to any political party, organization, committee, or individual for any political purpose whatsoever or for the purpose of influencing legislation of any kind or to promote or defeat the candidacy of any person for nomination, appointment, or election to any political office. The crime was 2 years in prison. I'm sorry, 5 years in prison, and if it was a corporation that did it, it was dissolved. That's, in my opinion, what we need to go back to, JR. Thanks for your call. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817. The Washington Monthly.
When you purchase or refinance a home, the lender closing cost may add up to thousands of dollars. Well, at Ditech.com, we've cut our closing cost to just $395. It's called the Ditech One Fee. One low fee is all there is. No points or broker fee. The $395 Ditech One Fee. Why pay more? Log on to Ditech.com for terms and license disclosures or call 1-800-DITECH-1. That's 1-800-DITECH-1. Equal housing opportunity.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. But judge for yourself. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. And we will send you a free sampler. Yes, a free sampler. Two full-size bottles delivered to your doorstep for a $10 shipping cost only. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
The Mike Molloy Show.
We are very lucky tonight to have joining us from California, Geneva, Bartkop.com's resident astrologer. Can you tell us anything about George W. Bush's chart?
There was a lot of stuff in his chart. He's got a lot of aspects on his own that would indicate that he would be easily maneuvered into being a puppet, a front man, or people who had more of a scheme in mind like that.
He is a very weak man when you get right down to it, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Extremely weak-willed. What sort of looming obstacles might keep Bush from being reelected? Is he going to face some sort of impeachment, criminal charges? Can you elaborate?
Well, that would be nice. I mean,
it would.
If they did it to Clinton with as little as they had to go on.
Oh, my God.
Why not?
The Mike Molloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
See the look on Nancy's face.
What's she doing?
I asked her if she wanted a boogie, and she just gave me this condescending sneer.
Is it the condescending, I don't boogie?
How would I keep up with her?
Right.
Boogieing.
Nancy can boogie. Yeah. Doug, I've never seen you dance.
Kind of looks like a frog in a blender.
I could dance with you till the cows come home. On second thought, I'd rather dance with the cows when you come home.
On the IE America Radio Network.
This is Mike Molloy with the IE America Radio Network. Want to know more about our talk shows and personalities but don't know where to look? Do you want to find out what guests are scheduled or what topics we'll be discussing on our programs? Would you like to participate in live chat or vote in interactive polls? All this and more is available at the IE America Radio website. Bookmark it, stop surfing, and get active. Visit www.ieamericaradio.com today.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Midst of the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. One of our listeners wanted to know the group that I mentioned as an alternative to the AARP, and I am hurriedly looking for that piece of paper here. And rats. They've got to come up with a better website. It was the National Association for the Protection of Medicare and Social Security, as I recall. Hang on just a second. It's on here. I've got it here someplace. And I don't know. I'll have to give it to you again tomorrow. I'm sorry. The desk gets piled up with papers, and I don't have it right in front of me, and I don't have it memorized. But I will repeat it again tomorrow. A letter from Thomas Jefferson to Joseph Milligan, April 6, 1816. He's now no longer president. He's looking back. He says, "Monopoly is odious, tyrannical, contrary to the natural right of which everyone has of buying and selling as he pleases, and necessitates a multitude of violent measures." Quote, end quote.
this. He was talking about Monsieur de Stutt Tracy, who, while Jefferson was president, actually translated his book. And I'll tell you about this tomorrow. It's really quite remarkable. But here's another phrase I'll just let you chew on overnight. This, again, from this letter by Thomas Jefferson. He said, "If the overgrown wealth of an individual be deemed dangerous to the state, the best corrective is the law of equal inheritance." He's talking about inheritance taxes. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number. Give us a call tomorrow if you want to get in on this. By the way, our program today was produced by Louise Hartman here in Vermont and Joe McPherson down in Atlanta. Engineered by Shar Jones in Detroit. Thanks, Shar, for a great job and a great show today. Thank you for joining us. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place. See you then.